Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
You're listening to MacBreak Tech. Okay, so in homage to the Mac, where it said welcome to Macintosh, welcome to Leopard. We now join a conversation already in progress. Well, we did warn everybody.
Yes.
Make sure that all of your apps are ready to be are ready to go before you update.
Well, and that's why I did it on my laptop first.
Yeah.
So I tried all my apps. All my apps seem to work fine. There's some little gotchas, but in general, I mean, I was thinking, okay, something like Little Snitch or Flip for Mac, or even because I have an old version of Stuff It.
But you're not running Ape, are you?
No. I looked into that. I'm not running Ape. I'm not running Quicksilver. I'm not running any of the major hacksies.
Yeah, but Quicksilver's not... doesn't leech into anywhere.
I know that. Well, but that's what I'm saying is that some people have seen some weirdness with Quicksilver. I didn't see it myself.
The only weirdness I've seen so far is that the thing that tells you to not show Quicksilver in the dock appears to get defeated by dock. Mm-hmm. Dock one, the Quicksilver dock. Zero.
I will say this, the new dock, for some reason, it takes up more space.
Well, it's because they got to get all the reflecties in there.
Yeah, I guess so, because
make the dock smaller.
No. You don't understand. But only when Kenji's it's on the dock is already at the minimum size with no magnification. So now it actually goes way off the edge of the screens instead of staying on the
screen.
I think
you need to get some stuff out of your dock.
But I use all those
start looking
little...
Looking at folder management.
Cons.
Get used to the fan.
Well, the fan doesn't work for me either because all my folders already have too much stuff in it. So it covers almost the entire screen when the folder pops up.
Okay. Well, I don't know. See, I have yet to be irritated by the reflecty dock because I always have used the dock on the side. So,
dock on the side is always the way I've used.
The side doesn't give me enough screen space.
Right. That's because you have too many icons in your dock.
I don't have too many icons. Yeah. I just need lots of software.
Kenji has special needs.
I have special needs.
Isn't there a dock tool that goes and repopulates the dock so you can flip it to different things?
Somebody had like a multi-layered dock, which I thought would be kind of cool.
It's like adding the second layer on the Golden Gate Bridge, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I mentioned earlier maybe a dock per virtual desktop.
That would be cool. Yeah,
that would solve your problem.
I will say that's one of my favorite things about space is that you can assign apps to go to a certain space. I love that.
Banish it to space, too.
I heard there might be a bug. I haven't tried this yet, but supposedly if you assign an application to a space and then turn off spaces and launch that app, it goes into the virtual space that doesn't exist right now.
I actually tested it. It disappears.
Well, I'm sure that they're going to get that bug fixed.
Launch it into the ether.
Well, but that's like an old OS 9 bug when you used to have two-screen Mac, and you put your document on the other screen, or you put a palette on the other screen, it would disappear. So the only way to get it back was to plug in the monitor and then move it back to the other side.
Right.
Oh wow. So is this new one a nice memory hog or?
There's no extra memory.
For the new OS?
Yeah. No. Spaces doesn't take
it. Oh, no. Spaces doesn't take
it. That's a freebie feature.
Oh, no. I mean, if you launch the app and then turn off the space and it's sitting there running.
Because it's running.
Okay. You can still do a command Q to get rid of it. Or a force quit to get rid of it. Or a reboot to get rid of it.
It's running more lightly because it's not encumbered by all that pesky user input.
Mm.
Yeah.
I can't type on that window. Well, the thing I want to do today is that so many other places have already covered the big features. So, like, for example, MacBreak Weekly, which you can find on twit.tv/mbw64, did a really great job of telling everybody about everything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's no reason to rehash that very discussion. Just go listen to that one.
Although there are some things that those guys missed a little bit, but the major stuff.
But they're going feature by feature by feature, and which is a fine way to do this. Mm-hmm. Ars Technica has an article on Mac OS 10.5, which is
very good.
Yeah. It's on the level of MacBreak Tech. Mm-hmm. Because it talks about some really specific technologies and talks about massive bundles with 64-bit apps mm-hmm. that are going to start showing up. And then for a more down-to-earth review, Macworld.com has a
ongoing series.
Ongoing series. But their overhead review was really good. And then Andy Inokto wrote a review based on the price of each thing, as if he were going to buy each
Apple. Yeah,
it was maybe
cut all those prices in half, and then you might be able to convince.
Well, you have
me
to remember that he's an old school Mac journalist, right? So he's remembering when stuff used to cost a lot.
Back in the day when it cost a lot.
Well, we talked about that
you had to hire the pack animal to bring the 5.5-inch discs home,
or the 3.5-inch discs actually weighed more than the 5.25-inch flaps. Anyway, it was an interesting idea that Mail was the most his most expensive app. Saw that as the biggest win from a cost point of view.
And the new Mail is nice. I like it.
Mail's awesome. The thing that I noticed is this was something that kind of was a mind blow for me, was that after getting Leopard installed, things didn't really change. You know, Mail was still Mail. Mm-hmm. The Finder was still the Finder, although searching was like, whoa, this is brand new.
It's quite different. Yeah.
It's quite a different experience. So what I do know is that all those people have reviewed Leopard from a feature by feature, going down the list of the 300, talking about that. So we're not going to do that. The thesis that I have for this is that Leopard is as big a jump in computing as the Mac 128 was.
Okay.
From the day. So here's the paradigms that happen. The original Unix DOS mentality, which was a file name, had eight characters or 16 characters and an extension.
Right.
And so all your file names, you either had to remember what they were or write them down or that. And then when the Mac came out, or the Lisa, the Mac, Windows 1.0, all those, we get a file name, but it's associating with an icon. And that icon is in the shape of a document or an application or a something.
Oh, I actually know that it might be something.
It might actually, and so you can visually get rid of a whole bunch of noise just by looking at this thing, right? So you're not based on this cryptic, PSD24.txt, whatever that is. The Mac also added something that was really, for its day, was kind of like the big mind jump, and that was type and creator. So every file and every app had a type. Mm-hmm. And so that's and it was four letters, and so even Apple made.
But it was embedded.
It was embedded to the thing. And so when it made a file, it set its creator, so that when you double clicked it, it knew what file, or excuse me, what application was supposed to open it. And up until then, it was to the user to remember what was supposed to open what. So you went and typed in, Vim, and then 8-242.txt, and then it would open that. So it was to you to remember what it was that you were opening. But now you don't have to remember what is going to open that thing.
Well, that's what the extensions were for, right?
That's what the extensions were for, but you couldn't just type in the name without the extension and have Vim opened it. It was explicit. It had to know the whole path. So what we get in OS 10.5 is the next thing, and that is this concept of being able to search visually using cover flow and previews. So for example, I was looking at my documents folder, and I was flipping through it in cover flow. And I found a document that I thought that I'd lost. In fact, I thought that it just got thrown away or lost or whatever. And it turned out that it was named Untitled 3 dot whatever it was, right?
Okay.
But there was the file. It was there. It's just that, in my haste to save something, I just saved it and didn't think about what name it was. And so, but I found it. And so it turned out that I'd gone and recreated what I had done, but it wasn't nearly the same take as the first one. And so this OS is the first one that really lets me go and see into the files. And so suddenly I'm not looking at a file name anymore, but I'm looking at the file.
Yeah, or some, you know, vague icon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So the next thing that I did in keeping with this preview was I searched for the word logo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I didn't get a bunch of turtles in my but I did get a whole bunch of files, and they started to draw the preview on each one of them. Mm-hmm. So suddenly I'm not caring what the name of it is. I'm looking at it by, oh, there's the logo I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly the word means nothing, and the content means everything.
Well, because you can look at it immediately, yeah. Right? I mean, the word is still something because you had to find it first.
Right.
I mean, you use it as your denotation for finding it in the first place.
Right, but suddenly I'm not bound by the name of the file.
Mm-hmm.
It gets a little bit closer to, I had that sort of strained library metaphor about the book that I found in some university library just by wandering through the stacks or whatever. It does give you that ability to sort of narrow your search set to a given type of file or a set of files in a given location, and then really just sort of flip through them as if you're flipping through
the
page.
That was the economics book
that you found at Borders.
That's right. Yeah, so, and that's good because you will find things that you hadn't forgotten. You don't have a label for them in your head anymore, but if you're presented with it, it'll jog something,
right,
whether
yeah.
that be
yeah,
the lost file or whatever.
Much more organic, fuzzy search, if you want. Mm-hmm. Think about it.
Fuzzy searching.
Well, the other part is that because Preview works with so many files, Word files, PowerPoint files, all of your presentation files from Keynote, all of the and most of the JPEG stuff, most of your PSD files, all that stuff is all there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're getting you don't even have to wait for the app to open anymore to see if that's the right one.
Right. Well, and it does make it more convenient now. So, I mean, to me, though, that's just an overall part of the capabilities that we're gaining here. I mean, it's just it's that next step forward of the maturing of the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it easier to find that stuff now and easier to navigate through it all.
Right, and it gives us a pseudo 3D environment that, you know, getting us used to using it. Maybe a little bit without actually having all the, you know, just encumbrance of
3D space.
The 3D space.
Well, right, because 3D space is confusing, but if you make it into a line, then mm-hmm. that works. It's a left-right concept.
Yeah. I still wouldn't. Yeah, it's almost one of those Captain Obvious visual things are best explained visually sort of thing. If for visual media, I can totally see this. But, you know, for example, I typed in drivers, and I'm seeing the Mac OS X USB kernel sample code page, which is cool because I didn't know that existed. And I might actually go read it now that it's right here in front of my face. But it definitely would still, you know, there's still a place for text-based searching and labeling.
Sure, but that's why quick search or that's what it should be called now. It's called Spotlight. But that's why Spotlight lets you. There's two buttons. One lets you find by file name, and the other one lets you find by contents.
Mm-hmm.
And its default is by content.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes a lot of sense because
it's looking in the file.
It's looking in the file, and why not? Because it's already indexed all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It definitely feels more responsive in a lot of ways. You know, it feels closer to what I expected it to be last time.
Okay.
I guess with the previous release, as far as searching goes, in my
opinion. You mean Spotlight?
Yeah, Spotlight. Because when they announced Spotlight, I was like, oh, hey, this is really nice. And I didn't use it all that much.
Mm. Well, you're kind of forced to. I mean, anytime you did a find, it was...
Right, but I didn't use the Spotlight, you know, the little magnifying glass in the side of the system because it didn't work
It
didn't work fast enough. Right. Now it feels more responsive to me. It feels that they've actually, okay, now instead of me always bringing up a folder window and looking through it that way, I will use the Spotlight piece now a little bit more.
Well, so. I just couldn't get around that. If I had to think about what I wanted, I'd already know where it was.
Mm-hmm.
If
you've got a good organization system, right?
Yeah. But It's just the simple act of naming a thing helps me remember where it is. Mm-hmm. And so Spotlight wasn't – I probably haven't used it more than 50 times.
Right.
So.
Well, and for me, it was all about the speed of it and the, you know, that it didn't match what I expected the speed-wise. Now, it still has its little nuances to it, I would say, but I definitely, the overall spotlight and the overall searching, I definitely agree that it feels better, and, you know, perusing files through CoverFlow is pretty cool looking. I
mean, have any of you made any significant investment in time in Spotlight commenting as a means of adding richer metadata to what's on there?
In the previous OS, yeah. I tried it.
How'd the experiment go?
Only so.
Did it feel burdensome to have to?
Why am I doing all this extra? I mean, if it's something that is easy along the way, then I don't have a problem with it.
Right.
But
I don't have an opinion one way or another. I haven't felt compelled to do it yet myself, but I'm sure somebody out there has. I'd be interested to hear their experiences with it.
With certain documents, like when I'm creating Illustrator documents or Photoshop files, I do go in and put additional data in most of my files.
Like project name or client? Project
name, client name, keyword searches, all that kind of stuff. I do put that in there because the Adobe product series lets you do that.
And right.
Through Bridge, you can search on all that very easily.
Okay.
So that's one thing where I have done additional metadata, but I haven't done the Spotlight metadata data other than the initial test I did way back when.
It's amazing how much stuff you can search on. Mm-hmm. In Spotlight, because there's every app that gets installed that has bothered to add their key, implement that, you can search on that stuff. For example, like you could search on the color red if your XFS data is that it X. If your
you mean the camera picture, data?
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, the EXIF stuff.
Yeah. So right. if you added you know tagging to that and calling it when you're searching for color, then you could find that.
Right.
So that's okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. So there are ways of doing those kind of taggings that are definitely useful. So
I was playing with smart folders.
Yep.
And in OS 10.4 in Tiger, smart folders were really slow.
Yeah.
And
they didn't always work. That was the thing.
Right. And so I kind of abandoned them. And I still had smart folders. Like, for example, if I made a smart folder that remembered everything or that showed me everything that I had done in the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then you can burn that folder to a CD or to a DVD. And then you have that either as a backup or as a to-go or whatever. And that was kind of neat. But this new version of it, this new take on it is interesting because it gives you, you know, you can say, I just want to see music that was played.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For example. So you get that view out of, out in the open, and then, you know, here's this list of things that are in discontinuous places.
And you're really talking about folder actions, really.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about smart folders.
Oh, in
the Finder.
In the Finder,
okay. Yeah.
I haven't played around with this too much yet, but I heard mention of they've enhanced the logic on those searches so you can nest it. It's a little geeky to want that nested Boolean logic, but I run into that with the smart functionality, both in iTunes where I'm trying to make smart playlists and stuff. You can get yourself backed into a corner where you really need just one more level of complexity to express something.
The thing that's missing is, and this was my big grrr, was that I don't want something. I want to be able to exclude it.
Mm-hmm. No,
so, for example, like anything that has the extension DOC or MP3.
Oh,
or,
I just noticed that. It doesn't have an is not.
Is like not, that. Right. It's is not is missing.
Right.
It's like, why still?
It still is?
It's not in there.
It's always here, yeah. Something is.
Yeah, something is.
You can't do negative logic.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want that.
Unless, yeah.
I mean, like, why have half the logic? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you want to...
Because Apple's a positive company.
Sure.
There you go. It's a visualization thing.
We're being positive about
this. This is a concept. I wrote it down here on the paper, which is user-based application building. And so, I kind of see smart folders as that gateway into I want my data to look like this, or I want my machine to do this. And the next pretty cool thing from this concept of user-based application
creation is the web data in that can become a dashboard.
Oh, I've said that to a couple people now, and they're like, well, wait, you just took that web page and dropped it in a dashboard, and you can move it around in there still? And you can, yeah, that's
– yeah.
It's pretty cool. I don't know if you guys have played with it.
I haven't played with it yet, no.
It's super easy to use. You just bring – in Safari, there's just that little paper clipping there with a pair of scissors, and you just click it, and suddenly you can highlight any part of the web page you want, mm-hmm. and it turns it into a dash code piece. Instantaneously. Oh, okay.
So here's an example. Foxtrot,
okay.
which is Bill Amend's comic about – is it Bill Amend?
Yeah,
that sounds right. Anyway, Foxtrot was my favorite comic when he was doing it every day. But now he's just done once a week. So he released a dashboard that showed his Sunday comic, but it was squished so that it was too small. You couldn't actually read the text. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, okay, it's kind of neat that I can see Foxtrot in the thing, but I just want to see the full comic. So it literally is two clicks to make it go. You got to click the paperclip, then you got to click the graphic, and then you got to click.
It's three clicks.
And then you got to click go.
The ad, yeah. And then it brings it up.
Now what I'm curious about is it actually running the entire page in the background?
It is, because what you can do is if you hit the edit button in that dash code, you can actually move around. It is, in essence, a mini web browser. So, I mean, I just did what John said, and if I go in here and hit the little information button and hit edit when it brings it up, I can actually move around in that area there. So now, you can actually change, in essence, the web page that it's giving you a view into.
And so if that page updates, you get the updated version?
Yep. So, yeah, tomorrow, if I was to come back here, this dash code widget would actually be
basically... Actually, it's only updates only on Sunday.
On Sunday. Well, yeah. Okay, yeah. So his comic, but if it was... For example, I set one up. Instead of using the built-in stock ticker, I wanted to use the stock ticker I had in E-Trade.
Oh, right.
And to log it. Well, so I actually set up one that looked into my logged-in E-Trade piece.
Oh, nice.
And it actually worked. I was very surprised that it actually would. But
so it's sending in the cookies and all that?
It must have, Because I did tell it to keep me logged in. But when I did that, it had that, it popped it up, and I was actually able to see that internal ticker that was my private stock ticker.
Nice.
Now, do you think it could also be running whatever nasty little ads might be on a particular page you've cut from? Or
yeah, because the page, it appears the entire page is there. But the question is, does it access that information if it's not visually shown in the dash code?
I don't think it does. I think what it does is it goes and parses down through and says that's the piece you want. But because it's got the breadcrumb back to the rest of the code so that you can go and edit it later... Because
it's not displaying it, but you're still making a request to the server.
Yeah, see, the way that dashboards or the widgets work, dashboards work, is that there. I don't know if you've ever written one. Mm. Okay, so it has when you request data, you have to go through a manager to get that data. It's not like a web page, which just has refreshes and Java and all this stuff that's all running. This thing is really specific. So if you want something, you've got to request it through the part, and then it will send it back, and then that's the only thing that you get back.
Right, but there's still no such thing as telling the server, even through this manager, to give me just this div from a web page.
I think that's what it's doing.
Maybe there's no way to request just a div from the server, though. It's still got it. The manager's making a full page request and then just giving you the little piece asked for.
Piece of data from it.
Right. Okay, but it's not running the banners. It's not running
those things.
It's just going to toss that out.
Right. It won't make all the subsequent requests that it might need for other images that you didn't ask for and that sort of stuff.
Right.
That's why it's useful.
Yeah.
And that's why I really like it, too. I mean, it's a cool little piece. In fact, the problem I've had with it is that, and it's the thing I would like almost, is, unless I've totally missed it, I can't resize those widgets easily.
Feature coming soon, I bet.
Yeah, because I might, if I did Foxtrot, for example, it's a big comic, and it's going to take up two-thirds of my screen space.
Well, maybe there needs to be two states of it, so you can define a large and a small, so when you click it, it goes... Whoosh, well, and then we click it again, it goes...
And there's several widgets that do that. For example, Radars in Motion, which is a great one that I use, has that ability. So,
or the like, for example, Weather Underground, there's a... If you go to 94107, there's a whole bunch of weather stations that are reporting in, and I only want the one weather station that's, you know, over there at South Beach Harbor. So that's easy to get.
By the way, I will say that one of the pre-built new widgets, the little movie one, is kind of cool.
The which one?
Movie one. I don't know if you guys have played with the movie widget. It just has
hello
a
and series. Welcome to Movie Widget.
Yeah, if you know pretty much.
If you know the movie you'd like to see, press one now.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it's kind of like. But it's a nice little widget if you if you're a movie buff like me. It's kind of cool. You can it cycles through the current movies in your zip code, and you click on it, and it brings up all the movie theaters showing it and times and all that. It's kind of like the old Sherlock movie piece was.
Can you press buy and it will summon you a ticket for you?
Can you buy your ticket there? That's a good question. I don't know if I tried that.
What service is it hooked into?
Doesn't look like it. I'm testing it right now.
That's then I have to go back to.
Oh wait, no, there it is. Buy ticket. I see it. Never mind. I missed it.
It's based on zip codes.
Yeah, you can enter. Yeah, for the information, you can enter your zip code, and it's Fandango basically who's powering.
Oh, there it is.
So it is a Fandango piece.
I was all excited about something I could just see and realize that I'm really not anywhere near Cupertino.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the default one.
I wonder if the Dollar Theater is still down there in Cupertino or the inexpensive theater. I'm sure it's not a buck anymore.
There's a couple of them down there still, though. But as far as applications go?
Well, Automator.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what's changed in Automator?
They changed all the icons around so that it's not based on the sorting is not based on an application anymore. It's based on task.
Okay.
Which makes a ton more sense.
Yeah.
So that, for example, if you, if you're looking for something in the Finder, you don't click Finder and see it. It's there's a section that's files and something.
Folders maybe.
Yeah, and files and folders.
It presents you with a starting point for a new workflow now. So when you bring up a new workflow, you can say custom, a Finder, a folder one, a music or audio, photo or image or text-based workflow. So it gives you kind of these pre-defaulted starting points now.
It's kind of like Pages.
Yeah. It feels a lot like the wizard-based starting points.
So, and you don't have to be a wizard to use it.
This is true.
But you still have to follow those crazy rules that we talked about.
Yeah, although it has variables now. That's a big
one. Nice.
That's a huge deal, in my opinion.
So branching logic?
Yes, you can branch based off of the variables a bit.
So. Branch if not equal.
But only positive booleans.
No negative booleans.
Oh, branch if equal? There is no not. Not is not a word in the Mac OS dictionary.
Naughty not.
But anyway, I'm looking forward to doing a lot with Automator. But even more cool is that Dash Code is no longer beta. It's been released to the wild.
Yes.
It's a 1.0.
And it's pretty... I didn't take too long looking at it because I'm working on a bunch of other stuff. Yeah. But my initial look, it looks very nice.
You can make a countdown timer in about 4 minutes.
Yeah. It's pretty quick and easy to do that kind of stuff. So.
For those who are unfamiliar with it that's thing that helps you create skeleton widgets with ease. Is that not?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So unlike the web data thing, there's a debugger in it.
Mm-hmm.
You can see your code, write code. You can change your artwork and your backgrounds to be whatever you want it to be. You can define what's on the backside of the widget or the dashboard.
Which is an interesting thing to mention to a lot of people is that those that haven't installed the dev tools yet, they're on the main install DVD. It's just kind of buried now instead of being a separate disk, which is in the past how it had been, or very obvious. It's kind of like a little setback on the installer CD now. So
I think there's going to be an implicit bump on OpenOffice use on the Mac as a result of they put X11 as part of the main install now.
Yeah.
I noticed because I didn't have X11 on here until I upgraded and then noticed, I noticed they were putting it on there.
Isn't OpenOffice doing a native UI they've version this year?
They've got some version of that. But if you're not running X11, the interface looks really bad on the Mac. But if you're running the X11 version, looks fine. It looks just like the Windows version.
Cool.
So folks who didn't know
just like the Windows version with the weird menus, or is it more Mac-ish menus?
No, it's same menus.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. No big deal.
How about pretty? It works.
Well, so the thing that is pretty
is
Quartz Extreme.
Yes.
So I sat in a demo at the developer conference, And I was like, this is really cool. Mm-hmm. This is going to change so much for people. Because you can actually write and have and create a program that you can double click and make run with without writing any code.
And if you do have OpenGL code, you can integrate it.
Yeah, you can integrate it.
Which is, I have some OpenGL code from back in my day on SGIs. And I'm like, I haven't tested it yet, but I'm like, oh, I think I can easily fit that OpenGL code in here.
So based on the new X or based on the new Quartz Composer, there's going to be a monitor or a display right here at the top of the rack.
Yeah.
And it's going to have levels. Uh-huh. So you can see the levels of everything as it goes in the spectrum and a timer.
Uh-huh.
And so it'll just be right there. It'll show what's happening. So
All
based on Quartz Extreme.
So you can make really weird requests of your guests, like, I need you to not talk above 1K.
Yeah.
Until 20 minutes.
Can you not squeak like that? But it's going to take me about probably 2 hours to figure that out. And the only reason why it's going to take 2 hours is because I don't spend my day in Quartz Composer.
Writing code in general.
Yeah. But no, just writing Quartz Composer stuff.
Right.
I've done a lot of work in it. But it was one of those things like, well, it only works on a Mac. It only does this. But... But it's so cool. So anyway, I'm going to go back and do this development because I have a need, mm-hmm. and it's for that display right there.
The one that doesn't exist yet.
It's in the box. So, the thing with Quartz Extreme is that you don't have to be a programmer to make this go.
You have to be adventurous.
You have to have an interest in doing it, but you're not stopped in any way from playing with this thing.
That I agree with. Yeah, the barriers to entry into creating your own applications, in essence, especially very visually stunning ones, mm-hmm. is dropping very quickly.
Right. So you know that that screensaver that shipped with 10.4 that shows Apple News?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The RSS reader.
And it's aimed at Apple News. Well, if you want to, you can there's an example of that screensaver as the code. Mm-hmm. And so you can aim templates. It at your own whatever RSS feed that you want. So if you want to watch MacBreak Tech, there's an RSS feed for that. Mm-hmm. Or if you wanted to watch, Dig mm-hmm. or any
well,
of that.
And speaking of screensavers, there is the new the Word of the Day screensaver.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if you guys played with mm-hmm. it. It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it.
So
those little
well, see, that, things. That was built, Word of the Day screensaver was built in Quartz Composer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it probably took the guy more meetings
to get it approved
than it did to write.
So should the background be this blue undersea thing, or should it be purple, or how should the words go by?
Anyway, so just to kind of finish this thought, this is what Mac OS 10.5 has available to the user from an application development point of view. AppleScript, which leads to AppleScript Studio, Ruby, Python, Perl, PHP, TCL, MySQL, C, C++, Objective-C, Java, and JavaScript. Did I miss any?
Did I hear Python?
For low-level tools. I mean, then the things we're just talking about, the Quartz Composer, your Automator, those are all mm-hmm. higher level tools.
But still application development kind of stuff. And then from a shell point of view, there's SH, Bash, KSH, ZSH, CSH, and then there's scripting languages within there, which is set in awk. So, like...
You said awk.
I did say awk.
Sorry. That was a bad joke.
The idea is that I don't know of any other OS that has that much available to...
Out of the box.
Just out of the box. I mean, that's like in the day, you know, Annie Knock... Co was talking about how much this would cost. This is about $25,000 worth of development tools.
Yeah. No, it is. It definitely is bringing development to a larger audience if they want to get into it. Mm-hmm. That is what is nice about it.
Mm-hmm.
So long as they know it's there. It's not in.
Well, that's why we're talking about it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if you're already listening to this podcast, you probably
tell other people that they have these really cool things that they can make their own applications.
I'm about to start the Quartz Composer road trip. I've got the van. I'm ready to go city to city.
Nice. It's like a white van.
Making the pretty.
Blue highlights. And
just give me the URL of your RSS feed and 2 minutes later.
Here you go.
Product. That's right. That's
funny. You're going to be spreading the product word. Dictionary is named wrong.
Why?
It shouldn't be called dictionary.
What should it be called?
It should be called reference.
Reference.
Because it has a thesaurus or a thesaurus.
Large animal that lived many moons ago with a big vocabulary.
Yeah, thesaurus. And there is Wikipedia hooked up to it.
I will say the Wikipedia integration is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I can search Wikipedia without ever having to go to Wikipedia.
Well, and the thing is that it's a better view than you would get if with you just Wikipedia. Use Wikipedia.
So now you're just a click away from misinformation?
Yeah,
pretty much.
Actually, there was a study done that showed that Wikipedia is, on average, has the same number of errors as standard reference manuals do. And things like the Encyclopedia Britannica and so forth. They actually have the same number of errors on average of the amount of data they have as those reference manuals.
It's actually hilarious to watch the page war.
Aside from when Stephen Colbert gets a bug up in his craw and elephants are booming.
Yeah, then it is a little different. So.
But if you go to any page and look at the history of it, there's stuff that's being added and subtracted constantly where someone will just re-edit the page and put that information back, and then someone will unedit the page and change it back. Mm-hmm. And it's just like on a daily basis this goes on. And somebody has this, somebody has a page that's what they're the page mom for that page. And then there's the page wrecker and then the page mom and the page wrecker are they're always at odds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of page moms.
Lots of them out there.
But how long is it going to be before we can make our own dictionary or our own panels for this? Because I want Urban Dictionary in there as well.
Yeah.
Well, or any. I would like to know the words I've added to my system.
Oh yeah.
For like acronyms, for example, if I add acronyms for I work with military guys often,
sure,
and they have so many acronyms that I add into my own system, so the spell checker doesn't keep throwing up flags. I don't understand this. I don't understand this. I don't understand. I would love to be able to see what that acronym is and define it in my own dictionary here.
Yeah. Feed it just in industry-specific jargon would be great. That should be some standard format for it.
Now you can add it into the spell check, right?
You can add it in the spell check.
But nowhere else?
I'd like it in the dictionary also and be able to share that dictionary maybe. I mean, obviously, if they're going to Wikipedia, that means there's a web interface here. So could I not have my dictionary online somewhere?
You could have acronyms or you could have... Yeah, you could have the acronym database.
Everything like that.
Yep.
And stuff to get people acclimated, new hires to a company. You could have it so that's all the stuff that they would need to decipher that's jargon for their company or rules, procedures, that sort of stuff.
All that stuff, the HR thing. Search for HR stuff. Dump. Well, see, here's an interesting thing. Stuff. If you were able to put the HR stuff in the reference, because we're not going to call it dictionary, it's called reference. You're able to put that into reference, then you can have all that stuff that has to sit on the walls of every company that says, here's your rules and regulations, and here's the federal stuff, and here's this, all these.
I'm going to build a widget that is all the jobs.
I want that minimum wage job thing, the big laminated number.
And then I install it on everybody's machine, and then if they deinstall it, it automatically gets reinstalled, but it's always there. It's on everything, and then we don't have to put that stuff up on the wall that looks like hell.
Also, the ISO certification one, because if you've ever worked for an ISO certified company, you have to know this entire little thing. So have your little ISO certified
and the whistleblower clause.
Well, if you're gonna, don't stop there and just start putting your motivational posters on the dashboard as well.
I want demotivational posters only.
There we go. Well, that one we can actually build, I think.
Did you see the one, the demotivational poster? It's a guy in a stormtrooper suit sitting on a train, and he's all sort of sitting there looking unhappy. It's like knowing that you don't have to go to a job anymore because your work got blowed up.
Okay.
Oh, the links that we have to post on MacBreak Tech.
Making some work for yourself.
So, applications I wanted to mention really quick. I've run through the bevy of my applications, and virtually every one of my applications has worked fine so far. So
obviously, you're not running Pro Tools or Avid
that thing
or Avid Express.
Oh,
doesn't Avid break with point releases?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, okay. Beyond those applications, so far my testing of the Adobe Suite,
mm-hmm.
of the Apple Production Bundle.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait a minute. The Adobe Suite, mm-hmm. I'd seen a post or two that there could be some things wrong.
Yeah, the one that
with
so
After
far,
Effects and such.
Well, After Effects is a little, there are some weird things, and there are definitely, they don't work perfectly. There are some like GUI things where you see weird GUI things come up that shouldn't be there. But as far as like them right out, outright breaking, the only thing that really has seemingly, and Adobe themselves releases information, is Acrobat Professional and Bridge, I think it is, had some issues. But other than that, most of the applications are working pretty nicely. I was pretty happy.
I know John from Red Giant Software was afraid to go to 10.5 because mm-hmm. of the report of
After Effects issues. And if you're like, with any good new OS, if you're doing production work, unless you're really willing to put yourself through the ringer, don't make the upgrade until the first release comes out or the software you're using has been certified to really work under that OS.
Now, I haven't had a chance to really put this through the ringer, but have you noticed any OpenGL improvements?
Graphics-wise? You mean just speed or performance? Or
performance.
Performance does seem
never really had a big problem with glitches as far as OpenGL went.
Yeah, no, and I haven't seen any of those kind of things happening. I mean, the quartz layer, the OpenGL, all that seemed to be pretty nice. Speed-wise... other than, the first time I bring it up, sometimes if I haven't brought an application up under the OS yet, it seems to take just a little bit longer. But after I brought it up the first time, it seems to go good after that.
Because it's OpenGL 2 compliant now, right?
Yeah, which is, for those of you that are, graphics geeks, is pretty cool. There's a lot of new things in OpenGL 2.0 that are really nice. So.
Wow. How long is it going to be before X-Plane becomes even better?
Yeah. Well, X-Plane should be able to take advantage of all those kind of cool
things. I know, but...
I think we'll an ever-expanding
universe. You know, that guy keeps writing more and more cool stuff for his planes.
Yeah. But in general, so far, I've been pleasantly surprised. With the previous OS, there was a lot of applications that broke, especially high-end graphics stuff. And
10.4 had a lot of stuff that was not working for months and months and months.
And so far, the thing I found with 10.5 is that there are small things. I'm not saying everything works 100% perfectly, but in general, I mean, I bring up my graphics apps that do, that take over the full screen and have their own, environment and all that, and they're seemingly working nicely with the
I'm surprised at what OS. Didn't work. For example, FileMaker had some issues.
Yeah, which is kind of weird.
That didn't make sense at all to me. And then Daylight, which contact manager,
right,
not working.
Hmm.
Because of the integration, the crazy integration that it does with Mail, mm-hmm. Apple Mail.
Yeah.
And so there were issues with that. And I can understand that they couldn't have that ready before the end because they didn't have the final build. So how could they test it?
Right. In fact, one thing I have noticed also with certain apps,
uh-huh.
they actually launch faster, substantially faster in some ways. It was like... very surprised when I brought some of them up and they would almost instantly pop up. I was like, okay, that's kind of nice.
I'm amazed at how much unification of data there is now
in this system.
We were playing with iChat Theater,
mm-hmm.
and practically everything awesome. That we dragged into the show window would render correctly.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that didn't was an Illustrator dot an Illustrator file.
An AI file.
Yeah, an AI file. It didn't work.
Was that a newer AI file, or are you talking about the old legacy AI file that's supposed to be readable by stuff?
We're the one that's CS2 file. Didn't like it.
It was probably, I'll bet you it was a compressed AI file. It's one of those little things about AI files.
Why do I have to think about this?
It's unfortunately it is one of those Adobe Illustrator things. There's a compression check mark when you're saving out Adobe Illustrator files. For most applications to be compatible with Adobe Illustrator, you cannot turn on the compression. Mm. It's a classic thing that will hit you when you're trying to work with Adobe Illustrator files and other apps. So just a little note there.
Anyway, iChat Theater was pretty amazing.
Yes. Have you tried Go to My Mac?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy too.
Okay,
tell your story.
It's I did a test from an office. I had set up. I have three machines, you know, running. Well, I've tried the install on three machines, I guess I should say. And on one of my machines, I went to another one, threw a remote firewall right through the firewall, got it all set up. It was awesome. I was able to go back to the machine, see what I need, grab the file, disconnect. It worked very nicely. I was really impressed.
I think there's going to be like thousands of applications for that.
Yeah. It is a little scary. So, I mean,
why is it scary?
Well, the potential, because, for example, by default right now, the firewall is not up in the Mac OS, which is a major security oversight. And I don't know how many of you guys know that.
No, I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think that that's an issue. I think if you have a dumb as rocks router, yeah, it's going to get you all the firewall that you need.
But a lot
from
of,
a home from well, a home a and a small business point of view,
where the firewall was down on even the home routers because they didn't want people to have bad experiences with not being able to get to the web. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of early routers that had the firewalls down. I've gone.
Well, no. But
you're talking about the implicit firewall of NATing. Right?
I'm just saying that by default, a NAT does not allow for remote connections. Oh, it refuses them. Right. So that takes care of 99% of your firewall needs.
Right. But if you go out to Starbucks,
I'm in the middle of San Francisco using free municipal
turn off your sharing. Turn off file sharing. Well, turn off Windows sharing.
Unfortunately, it's beyond that, though. It is one of my biggest gripes, actually, with the new OS is that the firewall is not on by default, and there are actually problems with the firewall. These have already been found, that even if you turn on hiding, you can still see certain parts of the OS. So
I think it's, but it's there on ours today.
There are a couple reports coming out about this already, and today, this being Halloween and all, when we're actually talking about this, the first Trojan horse is actually out now, also for the Mac OS.
Yeah, but who's it targeting?
Guys go to porn sites.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you guys get what you deserve. Yeah. If you think that you're going to watch that for free, if you think that you're being given a gift, like, you know,
yeah.
And that's seriously, if you're going, I mean, I've fixed countless machines that have been owned by Windows users who either somebody surfed porn on their machine or they surfed porn on their machine. And don't surf porn on a Windows machine at all, because those things are just going to get owned in 5 seconds. But here's the thing, is that you have to show your machine to somebody and go, here, it's broken. What were you doing? Oh, yeah.
I was surfing the web. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay, this stuff doesn't show up like that.
Yeah. No, I will say.
Might as well go around licking all the doorknobs and, in the Castro district or something.
I will say, though, that ability to find other machines on the network now, it just finds them now a lot nicer.
Well, that's why there's no firewall on.
Which is the scary part.
Well, okay, but the idea is you can't have it both ways. No, you can't have this totally universal grab the, you know, find every machine, find every device, and have a firewall.
This is the sort of thing that comes up on the Security Now podcast all the time, right? It's that trade-off between convenience and security.
Right. Yeah. And so here's the thing. If you're going to go wander out in the coffee shop land of the world, you have a bigger problem. And then it's not firewalls. It's that your machine's going to get snagged by thieves, you know, because they're going to see what, you know, they're going to look around and go, oh, that's the target. That's what I want. And in San Francisco, this is a problem. Yeah. There's three people. One guy will distract you. One guy will do the lifting. And then there's another guy outside ready in the car to go.
The runner.
Yeah. And then they all split.
Yeah. But in general, I mean, if you even just go into system preferences and look at the new networking control panel, it's very nice. Mm-hmm. But also, the firewall is no longer where it used to be. It used to be part of sharing. It is now located under security.
That makes sense.
So
where it belonged in the first
place. Where it belonged. But for those looking for it and thinking, oh, well, it's under sharing, where'd my firewall go? It's now under your security. And the one thing is it works a little bit like a little snitch now when you do turn it on, is that you can have it be application specific, which is nice. So there's some nice, they've made it, you know, a little easier to use there. So
back to my Mac. It's a revolution.
Real quick, though.
Yeah.
I'm just running around here and testing Moto, and I don't see anything wrong.
Which version of Moto?
301.
Yep.
Cool.
That's what I'm running also, and I have not seen any problems. I've tested Cinema 4D, 10111, I think it is. Moto 301, Adobe CS3, the latest Apple production suite, some RealVis's products, which typically in the past have always had a problem, but Stitcher's worked fine so far. I was like, wow.
Actually, I did find an app that didn't work.
Which one?
Which was the Yahoo Messenger.
Oh.
It didn't work. And so I downloaded the new beta and it was fine.
No. That was
although good. They still call
isn't that a feature? You know, it doesn't work now?
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, this was like, made it, prevented it from working.
Yeah, I think it's actually a bullet point.
You found this. I'm a big speech synthesis and voice recognition guy, but the new voice in the Mac OS is so nice.
Wish it wasn't named Alex.
Yeah.
Doesn't even sound like it.
I know it doesn't. It's like, I have to listen to Alex here, too.
Well, I see that, you know, the Alex is really, you know, the male voices seem to be generally improved, but mm-hmm. I'm still hearing the software automatic mouth from the female voices.
The female ones didn't really change.
Ah.
That's why.
They didn't change at all.
Yeah.
I thought, but the thing was, is I listened to Alex for a little bit, and then I'm like, you know, I really like Bruce.
Mm. You just, like that little bit computerized?
It's just grown on me over the years, and I'm really, and it's not nostalgia, it's just that, okay, I know what that voice sounds like.
Right. Well, that's, you know, Stephen Hawking. Why isn't he changing his voice synthesizer? Because no one would recognize who he is if he changed his voice synthesizer.
We have a new voice for you, Stephen. So, Don't want it.
Yeah, so what does he actually have to run an emulator so he can get that old 8-bit voice sound?
No, actually, there's a company. They actually tried giving him new voices. I heard him talk about this one time, and he said they tried giving him new voices. No one knew who he was, so he went back to the old voices.
Okay, so this is one of the coolest things that I've ever seen. Still in iChat Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the video sharing,
right?
And going, the guy saying, "Well, I don't know where this is." I'm like, "Oh, let me show you." Mm-hmm. Drag the menu down and say, "Request to share screen." Mm-hmm. I get the screen. It shows up on my machine, and I'm driving, and I'm just showing him like, "Oh, well, here's this. This is where this feature is, and here's how to turn it on." And specifically, it was. How do I get grammar checking to work?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, well, that's easy. Just pull down the preferences for text edit, and there they are. Turn on grammar.
Yep.
As a remote help tool, making it that easy is good. Because, you know, we were talking about this a while back. I've done plenty of VNC how-to sessions with folks who have had trouble with stuff, and the only way you're going to walk them through it is click here, click here, click here, and you're not doing that over the phone.
No.
But you run into those age-old problems of, okay, they got to install the software, which usually that's not the problem. They've usually got to make some change to their router to allow you to come in, and that's always the big tripping point because the reason you're explaining it to them in the first place is they need a click-by-click.
That's right, and this is the magic that really eliminates this need for poking a hole in the router, for figuring out what the IP address is, for making sure that the ports aren't being blocked by the ISP.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like that breadcrumb that Apple's provided that fixes this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Even using it as a means of connecting to VNC, I've been a long time on the Mac anyway, chicken of the VNC user as my client for getting into doing remote desktops on servers that are using VNC. Mm-hmm. And you can get to it now through the go to server.
Oh, that's menu. Right. Yeah, well, that's even in the Finder. So if you have a server that has VNC, that's running a VNC server, you can click on that machine and you'll see share screen or connect to files.
Yeah, which is quite awesome.
It was like, first time I saw that, I was like, no. Wow.
Which actually brings me a point of, for those of you who are actually running the macOS server, the new server tools are quite nice for doing remote administration. I played with the new, you have to install a new set of server admin tools, but they're quite nice. The interface is a lot better, I find.
How does that work if you have a mixed server environment? So like if you have a 10.4 server and a 10.5 server?
That's what I actually have. I've actually got...
You have to have run two sets of tools or just one
set of tools?
Nice.
So I'm actually going to my 10.4 server from my 10.5 system and it sees it fine and
that's
works
cool.
Quite nicely.
That was unexpected actually.
So.
You know, I'm noticing here that there seems to be a search integrated with help. I just checking out iChat.
Ask a question.
And, you know, click on help, and there's a search right integrated right in there.
Yeah. So the cool thing about this is the new help, and the so far I haven't seen anybody talk about help, but if you click a menu, like, you know, there's your question, this little blue arrow
pops up
and it points at the menu where, you know, pulls the menu down and shows you here's where you should click.
Which goes back to the Mac OS 9 days. There was a capability in Mac OS 9 that would walk you through certain features like that.
Oh, yeah.
And
that was the help to it. Basically, it's like, here's this tool, here's
exactly.
this,
and walk
here's
you
this,
through.
Right, and it would actually show you.
It would show you step by step in the help. And that went away, and not many people used it, except for those of us who were doing tech support on OS 9 at the time and trying to show people, oh, you got this great feature, let it walk you through it. But it's kind of that feel coming back a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a forgotten feature coming back.
Forgot about that feature. I used to tell people, yes, do this. I'm like, why? I never use help. I'm like, no, use this because it'll show you what to do.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that you could take this, that would draw this red donut mm-hmm. on something and say, here's where this is supposed to be.
Yeah, no, it's quite nice. So,
all right, let's talk about Spaces just for a while.
Spaces is so cool.
You've used Virtue desktops, right?
No, not on the Mac.
You use
Virtue. I've used all of them pretty much.
Tom, did you ever use Virtue desktops?
Not on the Mac. Whenever I test drive a Linux distribution, I'd always see and try to use the different virtual desktops, and it would almost seem like a chore.
Uh-huh.
You know, why am I doing this? And it just didn't really. So when I saw Spaces, I'm like, why is this a big feature? In the half a day that I've been using Leopard,
uh-huh.
I'm already, you know, it's one of my hot corners, and I have apps tied to it, and I'm going to be using it all the time. It's going to drive me insane I go back to my Windows systems.
Well,
just
mean,
like Exposé.
That's one of the biggest things compared to other virtual desktop systems, is that I can tie apps directly to the desktop. So when it launches, for example, I now have Final Cut. I know which one's Final Cut now. And I have one that's my Photoshop one. I have one that's my email reading one. And those windows are now, I know, oh,
being
I need
able
to go to that
them.
Window.
So this was awesome. This was the, when I was, you know, in that 45 seconds of playing with this, I'm like, oh, how cool. Here's this app over here in Window 3. And I, you know, switched control arrow through the, mm-hmm. the thing. And that was all well and good. And so then I'm like, well, I'm just going to look something up here. So I'm back at the Finder, or the Safari window, and I type something, and I'm like, oh, I need to email this to somebody. So I Command L, Command C to grab the URL, and then I, because it's a learned thing, I Command tabbed to mail, and it went whoosh, to the window where mail was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, okay, because Virtue Desktops forced you to go, you know, back to the app.
Mm-hmm.
They had no way of knowing what window, you know, what app. But this idea, this integration, and to see that work in that first 30 seconds of, you know, playing with it, was like, okay, this is way powerful.
Yeah.
It's the feature that I didn't know I needed.
Yeah.
It's I'm feature. Already exactly. addicted to, yeah.
In fact, I think it will be the feature that is probably one of the most... You know, people like, oh, yeah, Spaces. Oh, look at all these other cool things. At first, when the OS was coming. But now that it's out, I think it's one of those things that people, it will be one of the most used features and most loved features of the new OS in general.
Well, this is important in that all the people here have this addiction to having two screens or multiple windows.
Or just high resolution, at least.
Yeah.
You know, that going down from 1920 by 1200 on my old machine to my current 15-inch laptop was a big step down. And this is immediately removing
it
that
problem.
It
fixes that problem.
In an easy way.
But what Spaces is going to let me do is I don't have to buy two screens for people. I can just say, well, you know, here, let me show you how to do this.
Or if you're on just a laptop and you're out and about, makes it way easier.
Yeah. Well, this means that, you know, when you're using Final Cut or Soundtrack,
mm-hmm.
it basically takes over the whole entire screen.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And so now I can push that over into into space one or space two or space three, and it can stay there, and then I can do all the other work that I need to do from a podcasting production point of view in that other window, and I'm not having to constantly hide and show where that window is.
Right.
About time, I think. Now, now, Tom, you had a request.
Oh, yeah. I think it would be excellent if I could have a wallpaper per virtual desktop.
Yep.
Okay.
That way I know where I am all the time, even if I don't have my apps open. I just think it would be...
And that is one of the advantages of just some of the third-party virtual desktops or like this, is that they do let you customize the desktop image per...
I want to customize the dock per...
I know, the dock, the desktop, all that. Yeah. So you know when you've gone into your Final Cut environment, you know when you've gone into your Photoshop environment, right. Things like that.
When your photo editor environment or your podcast environment.
Mm-hmm.
That would be... So that whole idea of when we talked about... on the show, we did... that we talked about the Finder, living with the Finder. Well, how amazing would that be to have 5 customizations without having to switch users? Because you can do that now if you have different users. You know, you can log into your Photoshop user and your and that. But
that would alleviate some of the docs that are just out of control.
Like Kenji's doc.
Yeah. Yes, it would definitely help with a dock like mine. So, although I will say that having it in that main dock, if I'm in my first desktop, when I click Final Cut, it just take once it launches, it takes me to that other desktop. So that is nice.
So how many people did this when they got OS 10 running, 10.5 running? Mount a file server and then disconnect from the network.
Mount the file server and then
disconnect from the network. And then watch the Mac not go into a hissy fit about losing.
Not send you to the beach for 3 minutes. Right? Yeah.
Like, ooh, look at the pretty spinning beach ball.
Yeah.
force relaunch on Finder.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. I mounted the 5 shares that I could mount, and then I turned off Apple Talk, turned off the airport, and then it basically said disconnect, 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 disconnect.
Yep.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
At long last, thank you.
Gosh, let's see. This has been ever since Apple Talk has been in existence. Back in the day, Apple Talk came out back in 19. Well, it came out when the laser printer came out. We didn't actually have file sharing until System 4, maybe it was 5. I don't remember. But in any case, if the SharePoint had anything to do with disconnect, took the Mac out.
Mm-hmm.
And during OS 9 days, if you were shared to somebody else's machine and their machine crashed, your machine crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I cannot tell you how many minutes of work I lost, or the two people lost, because of a bomb.
Well, the general thing of just having to wait and having your machine lock up when any network, even if it wasn't your fault, disconnect. It was ridiculous.
Now 20 years we've been waiting for this feature. Yeah. I think it's been the most requested feature of mine ever. Like, just don't do that.
Well, the biggest time waster for me would be when I'm leaving the house and I just close my laptop, open it up, and when I want to show somebody or a client, and sit there and watch the beach ball because it's waking up and expecting to see my network.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's just...
I think the next step for this is going to be to virtualize the whatever open file is there, so that if you had a file that was open, then you could just do a save anyway, and then when it gets back to that network, it goes, oh, I need to consolidate this.
Yeah, just make a temporary local copy
of
anything that's actively open over across the network connection.
We'll see that feature eventually. Mm-hmm. But, just having zero weight disconnect, nice.
Yeah. It feels nicer. It's a nice OS. Now, my biggest thing I've noticed also is I have a memory manager that shows me my used amount of memory. I have noticed now, though, applications and my memory usage has climbed substantially with the new OS.
Oh, that's all the semi-transparent menu up top.
I know. It's like it seems that there's definitely the niceness of the new GUI, maybe Quartz Extreme, whatever it is. There's multiple things, but my memory usage now peaks much quicker than it used to. And I don't know if it's with general memory management, or if it's all the Quartz Extreme stuff, all the different parts. But I've definitely noticed that in watching the memory and all that. So
I kind of don't care.
Well, I did notice today I had this unplugged, and this was the first time I ever noticed my laptop seeming to run out of juice before. I want to say I may have lost a good hour, half an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. Yeah, on battery power.
Mm-hmm.
It could be because of that damn sleep bug.
Coming back?
Yeah, well, that thing, if I don't push the power button and explicitly tell it to sleep, if I just close it, it never sleeps correct. And I get to my destination, I open the bag, and my Mac is like freaking hot because it's been running.
And I was reading everything for the show today, and so I really hadn't. It had every once in a while when I started to drift off and nod, I would wake back up and see the screen blank. But I want to say that usually I used to get over 2 hours of battery life, and now it seems to be reporting to me that I have 2 as soon as I unplug from mains. For you Brits out there.
One thing I also wanted to mention, because I haven't heard anyone else talk about, and I actually didn't find anything on the web about it, is in going through and, I wanted to look at everything. So one of the things I looked at is parental control, because I've had several people talk with me about, I heard about this new parental control. They really haven't talked about much, but is this really a good thing for my kids? First of all, I'll say it's really nice. If you have kids and you want to lock your Mac down, you want to control their web surfing, you want to say they can only be on the computer 2 hours a day or things like that, it's great for that. There's some really nice features.
Could also be really good for adults,
yes,
that are addicted to World of Warcraft.
It's very good for that, or it's very good for lab situations where you want to have a controlled lab environment. You've got several Macs and you want to have control because it lets remote administration of these accounts. So it's got some nice features. But I got one little gotcha that I found. I enabled it for a user account. I set up a separate user account on one of my systems to test it, and enabled it for the account. You can't enable it for administrative accounts, which makes sense. But I turned it back off.
So I'm thinking of several cases where I'd want to.
Yeah, well, this is true. But I turned it back off and continued working, and then we brought up Safari. Couldn't get to an HTTPS server. So I thought, maybe it's the new version of Safari. Then I went to Firefox, couldn't get there either. Mm-hmm. But my friend next to me could. I'm like, what's going on? Well, for some reason or another, when I turned it on and turned it off and didn't reboot, it locked me, myself, out of going to HTTPS sites. So I think this is one of those little maybe potential bugs there. As soon as I rebooted, as soon as I logged out and logged back in, it fixed the problem. But I was locked out of all secure connections that required any certificates once I had enabled it for this other account.
It's amazing how much that fixes logging out and logging back
in. So, but kind of a forewarning, if suddenly you can't get to an HTTPS site, it could be that somehow the parental controls have been turned on for another user.
I don't have kids yet, but I'm looking forward to the fact that I won't actually have to discuss any of these sort of social issues with them, like moderating our computer use. I just get to lock it all down, and they can, rant and rail as much as they want, but I don't have to actually teach them how to, compute well or balance their lives at all.
You're not taking anything away from them.
Well, what's interesting is because it's not a dictionary now, it's reference. One of the things you can do in the parental controls, you can actually lock down the dictionary application.
That's a good idea. Right, nice. So you can't type
that word. For parents out there, I'm not a parent either, but for parents out there, it is quite nice.
I want to make it so all they can use is the dictionary for 3 hours, and then it unlocks everything.
You get to use the dictionary first, and then you have to.
This is the funnest app in the whole world. It's called Dictionary.
it's all you got. I'm sure you can make a game out of it somehow.
Well, I used to play a game with an encyclopedia. And that is, you pick a topic, you open an encyclopedia to a something, right? Just randomly, and then that article, you have to read the article, and then from that article, you find the next thing that you want to look up. And the game was to get all the books out of the shelf to see how far you could go before you got a dead end.
Nice.
And I always played it at the library, and it was really fun. And then the librarians coming by are like, put those away. I'm like, I'm playing a game called this. And she's like, oh, that's a really cool game. I want to play that.
Something else I wanted to also talk about is .Mac integration.
Oh, yes. My .Mac account is being renewed.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's starting to tempt me. Looking at that, I never saw it before.
It's pretty powerful. I mean, one of the nice things with the synchronization app is you can synchronize your dock. So if you are like me and you have 300,000 little icons in your dock and you don't have to replicate that in every one of your systems.
It was always cool to be able to replicate bookmarks. I really enjoyed having my bookmarks on my laptop and my three desktop machines when I had three desktop machines.
And when you make a bookmark on one system, it just shows up.
Up on all of them. It's pretty fun.
I use Google Browser Sync for that in Firefox.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like doing that basically. So, but this just happens.
But this was 3 years ago when this was a feature.
Oh, what's interesting
way
is that
back then.
Way back then.
It does give account statistics now when you do .Mac. And I realized it says when I first joined .Mac.
Oh, I know when I first joined .Mac.
2000 is what mine
says. Yeah, it's exactly. It's 19.
2000
is when I first that it was announced, when it was not .Mac, but it was called, what was it called?
And do they list other things that you could have bought with that amount of money now?
No, they don't
No, because it was free for the first 3 years.
Exchange
when
rate.
It was when the first version.
First 3 years or first 2 years?
First however many years. Yeah. It was, what was the name of it, though? It was called... Not .Mac. It was called iDisk. Yeah, it was called iDisk.
That's right.
And so when it first opened, just the sharing.
Or the file, data.
And it also had parental controls. It also had some other stuff with it. Mm-hmm. But that was
like a whole 10 meg?
It was like a whole 10 meg. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, those were the days.
Or maybe it was a whole 1 meg.
Yeah, I don't quite remember myself.
It was a long time ago. .Mac is useful.
A couple months to fill it up with your 56K connection.
Now you can fill even the multi gigabyte size in minutes.
All right, favorite feature so far.
I probably Spaces, and thanks for giving me the easy one.
Call it
first.
You were first. Now, whoever was going to be first was going to pick Spaces, I'm sure. How about you, Ben?
I'm going to pick my use of Spaces, which is now I'm going to always have an iTunes visualization because they are rad running in one of my Spaces windows, so I can flip over to it and know that coolness is going on even if I'm not looking at it right now.
Your Mac will always be cool, even though it will be hot.
The fan will be running constantly.
Those CPUs are pegged at 90%, aren't they?
Well, now what are you constantly – you have to have something playing.
Just white noise, probably. Yeah, an infinite loop of white noise on repeat.
I'll give you my Quartz Extreme visualization that keys off the microphone.
Cool. No.
And it has this random thing that goes like in a figure eight and sparks.
Which is, speaking of, I don't know if anyone's gone into the sound controls yet, but when you go to the microphone, there's now an ambient noise canceller built in. You can checkmark it inside the Mac OS.
How does that work?
Yeah, go to the sound control panel, go to the input, and you'll notice the input volumes is, there's now an ambient noise reduction button. I found it. I was looking around. I was like, oh, that's cool. And I actually did a test, and it worked pretty nicely. So
I think that's part of iChat, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it could have been something from iChat, but it's now part of the system itself. You just check it, use ambient noise reduction, and it pulls it out.
You think it's just a gate?
I'm not seeing it.
No, it's probably doing a bit of processing.
It didn't show up.
Because if it was just a gate, then it would sound wrong. Because then when there would be silence in between your words, then it would just clip.
You'd have to be checked on internal microphone, by the way, for that to show up.
Oh. Okay.
So if you're using line input, it won't show up. But if you check the
further investigation is required.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, but
I wonder if the sound of pile drivers would be subtly removed from any internal audio.
Yeah, that would be awesome. The problem is with the pile drivers is that they get closer to the down, they bang faster because they're
pattern changes.
Yeah, pattern changes, but not by much because it's those things are the most polluting things ever. I think. I watch the amount of diesel fuel that's unburned and the soot that's coming off that stuff.
Well, that gives us nice sunsets. Come on.
Right.
Let's see you pound something that large into the earth on, you know, using
on
your,
every day,
your
every
solar
day
powered
after day.
Such and such. Yeah.
I hear the pounding at night now.
Oh, my.
After the, and when it stops, it's like, what's missing? Feels wrong. I'm addicted to the pile drivers. Kenji, what about you?
It would definitely have to be spaces as well, but you know,
three of a kind.
But with spaces, I'm a big fan of already, you know, having applications go right to different spaces for me.
Yeah, that's great.
Because on my I do so much consulting on the road, you know, now I can literally have that Final Cut open at the same time I have Photoshop open, and they're not cluttering up the same space, and I can take up the full screen real estate. It's spaces has just been awesome already. Well, my next closest, though, for me, because I do have my system at home that I need to get to, is go to my Mac, you know, go back to my Mac.
Sure. That's a really amazing feature. Well, I'm going to break. I'm not going to give us four of a kind. As cool as Spaces is, and as much as I gushed about how Command-Tab was I'm like, okay, well, that's just one of those things that I'm just going to have now. It just works. It's no
quick look, I'll bet.
No, CoverFlow.
Oh, CoverFlow.
Because, like I said, it is, as far as I'm concerned, this changes the way that I'm going to interact with my Mac and the way that people around me, other people are going to see this. And I know that the old-time computer people are going to go, I know where all my files are. You know, that the Quicksilver user, you know, that's this feature is wasted on him or her.
Right.
Or it.
Well, no, you see, right here, I would have thought, you know, they certainly don't want me up in Cupertino making lists of new features, because I would have considered this part of CoverFlow.
What, Spaces?
Quick Look. No, CoverFlow and Quick Look.
Oh, it's the same feature as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
All it is another view, because you're looking at something, you press the space bar, whoosh, it zooms out. And the fact that they named it, they had to give it a name, is lame. Yeah. Like, it should just be that. That
should have been called Flippy.
Flippy. Just like dictionary should be called reference. And I want the SDK for reference.
Yes. I'm sure it's there.
That's the one I looked. It's not.
Oh.
There is a thing that's made. There is an SDK for dictionary, but it's not what I thought it was going to be.
It's to access it, not to augment it or add services to it.
Yeah,
and I'll see what I hope to see soon, maybe even in Leopard's life cycle, being able to add other languages to the dictionary.
Like Esperanto?
Yes, and Pig Latin. And
Ubby Dubby?
For me specifically, first year French and Japanese. Just so I can, you know,
turning Japanese,
m'appelle
are we?
Tech. So,
first year French. You're not going to take any more French than first year?
No.
Bonjour. Comment allez-vous?
Yeah, I remember that episode of Tick where the villain turned him into a two-headed parakeet that can only speak first year French.
Oh, my.
That would be like having your developer tools only get you to the first year CS classes.
Welcome can do a to bubble basic.
Sort. Yeah. They even, or logo.
Logo, yes. Mm-hmm. Your turtle will now go right.
Do you notice how everyone missed the 25-year anniversary of logo?
Yeah, I noticed that.
I was there with my little,
with your turtle?
Yeah, with my turtle shell.
Forward 40, right 10, forward 40, right 10, forward 40, right 10.
I spent a lot of, you know, sweaty school afternoons in a cramped bus banging out stuff on the Ataris.
Yeah.
Did my time.
Yeah.
All right, well, Logo is a fun language, although they never did a GCC version of Logo. Although, if you have,
now that we mention it,
if you have a PowerPC Mac, you can go to 3am.com, and there's a little web browser, or in the web browser, there's a basic terminal, and so you can type 10 print quote hello end quote 20
go to 10.
Go to 10 and type run, and it does what? Okay. And there's a whole there's even a graphic system that's based off off a logo.
Oh wow! So, well, can you add the semicolon at the end of the print statement to get it to make it go across
screen. Exactly. So that was a project that I did in March of 2003. I spent 30 days writing a language because I'd never done it before. And so that parser's still up there.
Nice.
Yeah, it doesn't run on the Intel Macs because Macromedia, a.k.a. Adobe, has not gotten off their butts and made Shockwave into an Intel binary.
Right.
Shockwave's still relevant?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's still relevant in Shockwave. And the thing is that they've announced the next version of Director. And so it will be shipping imminently. Thing that happens with this is that there's a lot of educational software that's going to be – that is being left behind as we speak because of Vista and because of OS X on Intel. And so
right along with a child or two. So
yeah. I mean, you know, we could keep these old machines running for a really long time just so that whatever educational tool will still run. But at some point you have to move forward because that's the only machine that's available.
Right.
All right, well, I don't have anything else to talk about.
So are we going to start now?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can tell me when we're recording?
We were good. So this is the show that starts with a conversation already in progress.
So we have had a conversation.
We've been talking about it the entire time. So it's all on that Mac there recording. And I know that's a little bit unshow-like because we don't actually introduce everyone until the end.
But it's our way. It's our nature.
It's not really, you know, we're not journalists. We're geeks. We use the stuff every day. Certainly I do some writing about this on forums and that, but I don't pretend to be what I'm not.
Yeah, I'm actually sitting here in a Mage t-shirt, if anybody actually recognizes that.
Yeah, I was wondering.
It's got a great big thunderbolt on it. So, Tom, where did you come from?
Pittsburgh, PA.
All right. And specifically, you've been on a show before.
Oh, yeah. I was the salad chef from Beaver on the April Fool's episode of Beer School. Anybody remembers that?
Yeah, if you're like, I've heard this voice before. I don't know where that voice came from.
The voice.
So your last name is Mahadi.
Mahady.
Oh, right. No, there, I knew that.
He even wrote it phonetically.
No, and I did it intentionally because it's funny because he was going to say you're going to
butcher my name.
You're going to make my name wrong. Tom Mahady, so from Pittsburgh. Now, there's a big active bunch of people doing all kinds of tech stuff there.
Bring them to us.
Well, I don't know. Pixar tends to scoop those guys up from...
Old
Carnegie Mellon University,
right?
Yeah,
they bring them to the render farm.
Just plug them in. Yeah,
just plug them in. They're interchangeable
into the render farm.
Elements.
Cool. Well, Ben Durbin, thanks for coming.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Anything crazy you're working on script wise?
Oh, nothing right now. No, I'm still. I've not yet made good on the performance art automator script, but. One of these episodes, it'll appear.
Exactly. Well, I'm looking forward to the performance art quartz composer thing that you're going to get your head around.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Trying to program out the shame.
The shame.
Kenji Kato?
Yes, Mr. Foster.
How's it going?
Good. Fun as normal. Now, I'll have to give a little caveat here that I did have a system that, you know, didn't make it all the way through the install.
What happened?
You know, not quite sure. It was I took our own advice and on my first system, installed it, didn't do any disk repair, didn't do the full backup, you know, threw all caution to the wind. And
just like me. I got all excited and I flipped a coin and it was fine. Like one head was don't bother and tails was full on and I... came up heads and I'm like, all right, I guess I'm not going to bother.
Yeah, number two went the same way. Number three, this system I went in and did fix repairs and repaired the drive and backed everything up and did all the things that a good, prudent person should do. Didn't make it through, so.
Got well, it could tell screen. That you were scared, and it could smell the fear.
Yeah, I guess so. And it knew it was the production system, so it was like, you've done this on your non-production systems. Now we'll crash your production system.
Lulled you into the false sense of security. So
you went and on your non-production systems, you looked to make sure that all your tools ran first.
Yeah.
So that everything went just fine.
I was like, hey, everything's working. Let's go ahead and upgrade the
production system. A difference because, no, you have all Intel Max, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, well. They love you, so.
Oh, well, I guess that's the way it
probably some software, hardware locking key thing I had hooked up or something like that.
You know, do you have any dongles on them?
I do. That's the one machine I have dongles on.
So right. You know what it probably was? It was the dongle manager.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'll diagnose it here soon. So.
Those damn dongles.
Down with dongles.
All right, well.
And you are?
I'm John Foster. And you've been listening to MacBreak Tech, and we'll see you on the other side.